Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This week's stories were told live at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was Grilled. Here's today's host, Brooklyn-based storyteller Mark Pagan.
I'm going to ask you to go wild again for our second half first storyteller. Ladies and gentlemen, go nuts for Nina Lichtenstein!
It's February of 2017, and I'm sitting in the waiting room outside the interrogation office at the Ben-Gurion Airport in Israel. I'm here because my boyfriend and I are living in Jerusalem for 8 months, and we just took a little sort of long weekend in Barcelona to spread our wings a little, and now we're back. It's been about an hour since they escorted me away from the passport control, and I'm just sitting here feeling completely anxious. I'm obsessing and my heart rate is increasing because I'm thinking about all the worst case scenarios. I'm also really worried about some of the things I might have posted on Facebook and social media about the conflict, the Arab-Israeli conflict, and now I'm wondering if it can be used against me. My boyfriend, who stood in the line next to me, sailed right through the passport control. He has children and grandchildren who live here, and he speaks Hebrew fluently so he can schmooze with them, and obviously that worked. But every day, people get stopped here and detained and questioned and turned away. And I'm thinking, that could happen to me today. Earlier in line, in the area where the passport control was, the place was teeming with people super excited to be in the Holy Land. There were some African nuns in front of me, dressed in their beautiful white pilgrimage clothing. Jewish families from the diaspora who were happy and chatting excitedly, probably here to celebrate a bar mitzvah or maybe tour the ancestral homeland. And there were all these hip, slick-looking hipster dudes with slim-fitting suits and their iPhones, who were probably in Israel to strike up a deal with one of the tech or pharmaceutical startup companies that are thriving in this startup nation. So I'm standing and looking at that amazing variety of people who all consider this place special and who all want to get in. In front of me in line, there's a Muslim family. And I notice the little cute boys' Spider-Man sneakers and the women who are dressed in traditional Muslim clothing. And I think they're beautiful. And then I wonder how they feel right now, because I'm pretty sure they're anxious and that they expect trouble, contrary to me, who sort of assume that I'm gonna have an easy entry. And sure enough, when they step up to the passport booth, the person who's checking the passports calls a colleague of hers who comes over, takes all their passports, slips it into a Ziploc bag as if they're contaminated, and escorts the family over to a separated area in the waiting hall. Now it's my turn. I step up to the yellow line and I wait politely, the way you should do until you're called up. And when I step up to the line, up to the window, I take my Norwegian passport out and I slide it under that little tiny strip of space between the glass wall that separates the face of the passport control woman and me. A passport that signifies privilege. And I'm expecting a few courteous questions about my plans, why I'm here. And then I expect to get that little computer-printed piece of paper with the barcode and my picture, so I can just go on and meet my boyfriend on the other side, on the inside. But that is not what happens. The woman behind the glass starts to flip through my passport, and she's clicking on keys on her computer, and she really doesn't even look at me. And she starts asking what I'm doing here, where I'm staying, how long am I staying, what's the address, how do I have money to stay there? And before I even have a chance to answer, she just kind of like, and then she sighs and pushes her chair away from the desk a little and calls over one of her colleagues, who comes toward me with sleepy eyes and takes my passport and puts it into a Ziploc bag and escorts me over to the area. But they don't take me to the area where they took the Muslim family. They take me to the other side, to another waiting area, where I see white European-looking people waiting in chairs along the wall. I figure that the long waiting period is something that they do in order to sort of get your nerves going and make you realize that you have to get your story in order. So I take the time, and I sit there and I work on my story, my true story, my life story, how I converted to Judaism over 30 years ago, and how I raised three Jewish Viking men. How I've kept a kosher home for all these years and sent them to Jewish school and been active in my synagogue and celebrated the Sabbath and all the Jewish holidays and been in all sorts of Jewish organizations. In other words, I'm collecting all my Jew creds. And I want to have a full house. Because when I go into that room, I want to let them know fast that I'm one of them. And for them to let me in on the inside. Finally, they call me in into this little clammy, tight space with like a lot of BO smell. Like the kind of BO smell that comes from, you know, nervous animals, prey. And there's a woman who's the interrogation officer who sits in a black swivel chair on the other side of a desk. And she has her eyes hooked on me like darts going for the bullseye. And she starts with a barrage of questions, and she is rude, and she is direct, and she shows no mercy. And every now and then she leans sort of back to her male colleague who's sitting next to her and says some fast stuff in Hebrew that my elementary Hebrew is not able to pick up. The questions come out so fast, like sort of electronic bullets that are just meant to sort of startle you, right, and catch you off guard. What were you doing in Spain? Why do you go to Norway so often? Why do you stay in Norway for such short periods of time when you're there? Are your parents Jewish? Are they alive? Well, if they're alive, why do you stay for such short times? Where are you staying when you're here? How long are you staying? Who are you going to meet? Are you going to the territories while you're here? And that's when I have an aha moment. I see the perfect trifecta of what raised the red flag. My Norwegian passport, my frequent coming and going to Israel, and my gender. They are totally profiling me. In their eyes, I might be this dumb blonde Scandinavian woman who's naive and gullible, not Jewish. As far as they're concerned, I might be this woman who has been charmed and allured by really good-looking Arab men who might have intentions to harm the state of Israel, For all they know, I could be trafficking for them. And stuff like that actually do happen. So I get that they need to watch out. I'm really feeling that my blood is just boiling out of anxiousness and nervousness, and I start to ramble off everything I had thought about in the waiting room, like in one long breath, all my Jucreds, like vroom. I'm doing it so fast that my pitch is getting higher, and my voice is squeaking, and my face is turning red. It's a scene. She's kind of like looking at me. I don't give her a second to break in, you know, to ask any deeper questions. So this goes on for quite some time. And I realize that my creds are not really hitting home. She's still looking suspicious. And I'm used to this kind of stuff. For the last at least 30 or so years, right, since I became Jewish, I get a lot of the look that says, "Wow, that's funny. You don't look Jewish." But it's never been in an intimidating setting like this. Not even when I sat in front of those three Orthodox old rabbis for my conversion. Not then did I feel as intimidated and as scared as I did now. I remember convincing them and telling them I had studied so much. I'm ready. Just let me in and I'm going to be a super Jew. Just let me in. I sit back in the chair and I look at the interrogator and I see that she still looks suspicious. And I'm really sweating now. Now my sweat is contributing to the prey sweat in the room. It's an awful, awful situation to be in. The questions continue for quite some time. In fact, they're coming at me like hail of biblical proportions. But then, suddenly, something really strange happens. She kind of sits back in her chair and she looks like she's relaxing. She's not on the offensive anymore. And she flashes this big, bright, sunny smile. And she says in Hebrew, "Wow, hi chamuda, nachon? Wow, she's a sweetie, isn't she?" Wait. I'm like, are we best friends now? What's going on? She tries to make nice for a few minutes before she lets me go. It's like she wants my phone number and meet up for, you know, a glass of wine later. I'm like, this is too weird. And I just feel that her whole Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde routine was too much, and it's hard, too hard for me to smile. I leave the office with that little ticket in my hand. And I walk toward the electronic gates where I scan the barcode, and the gate opens in front of me and closes behind me. I'm in. I walk toward the baggage claim, and I think about that Muslim family. When I get to the baggage belt, which has that hypnotic hum, I'm spacing out as suitcases of all colors and shapes and sizes pass quietly in front of me. And I think about all the migrants and the refugees that are all over the world and who don't have my privilege and who are stopped and turned away, who don't travel with stuffed suitcases, who don't travel in airplanes. I also think about all the Jews during World War II who were hounded and fleeing countries at war, and how they were in boats and came to ports and were turned away and who perished at sea. And shit like that happened back then, and shit like that happens today. Well, I may have had quite a few experiences in my life where I've had to prove my credentials to get in, but I've never been turned away or denied entry. Never to a family or a tribe or an organization, a community, and never to a country. And this is something that I cannot ever take for granted, and something for which I am extremely grateful. Thank you.
Nina is a writer and a teacher. She was born and raised in Oslo, Norway. She lived in Connecticut for many years, where she raised her three Jewish Viking sons, Thor, Balder, and Odin. When they flew the nest, she migrated north to Brunswick, Maine, to pursue a quiet writing life, which is constantly interrupted. Nina also loves welcoming guests at her unique Airbnb barn in town. All right, I will be getting in touch with you later. And sort of regularly practices yoga in a never quite successful attempt to find her Zen. Let's give Nina another round of applause.
Sit tight for more sound bites. Our host asked today's teller some fun questions with answers that you didn't really hear in the story.
What is your connection to Maine?
So my connection to Maine is that once my three sons flew the nest down in Connecticut where I lived, I decided to follow love, and this is where it was.
I really like that. Question number two. What got you into storytelling?
So what got me into storytelling was that my entire life since I was a kid, I was petrified of public anything. And around the time when I turned 50, I decided to stop being so afraid and try to overcome that fear. And here I am. It hasn't been easy. It's never easy, but I love it.
Third question. You got two more, and then you'll be off the hook. Your third question is, what is your process for preparing to tell?
My process for preparing a tell, aside from thinking of the story, writing the story, and a little bit compulsively telling myself the story again and again, is to do a little voice warm-up that I learned about on a TED Talk. And it involves a lot of brrr and rrr and la la la, because it helps with just, you know, getting the tools going.
Have you done it already?
No, I'm going to go and embarrass myself in a bathroom stall shortly.
And last question is, tell us about one part of your story, like a behind the scenes detail that you are not including in your tale tonight.
Well, for any writer or teller, I think it's painful to take stuff out, but it always happens. It's always necessary. I had to take out a whole section where I'm talking about the fact that I've been through being grilled about being admitted to things many times in my life, as an immigrant, as a convert to Judaism, and as someone who came to America to work illegally. So that had to go. I had to kill that darling.
Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to Toad & Co. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, is online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org.